to take an intro.
Well, why don't you get your favorite hanging on there? How about this one? You like this one?
Oh, yeah, that one's pretty.
That's pretty right there. Now, come here, let me show you something. I like the blue balls.
Nueve. Blue Balls NYCFC. Season 9.
I like the blue balls. The blue balls.
Nueve.
Blue balls.
Season 9. Nueve.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Like, someone took a hole puncher to an exam book. Ladies and gentlemen, you've got blue balls. My name is Jake Beckard, and I'm your intrepid co-host. And I am joined this week, as every week, by my intrepid co-host, Mr. Trey Fillmore. Trey, can I have a boo book, please?
A boo book?
Yeah, can I have another boo book, please?
Oh, man, I hate when you start with references I don't get.
You don't remember this?
What is it?
Oh, this is such a... This is, it's not for anybody else. Let me tell you fucking
oh,
that
shit.
Much. I'll bring you up with it off mic just to give you
oh my God,
the grace
I
of
got
not
it,
having...
I got it. I got it.
Folks, Trey, how was your week?
Week's been actually pretty good. Things are good.
You got to give... Listen, it's kitten corner. You got to give the kitten update. This is, I've already got the kitten update, but I need the world to know.
One of our last kitten updates... because I don't know if I'll get another one, we'll see, but you know, he had to, as we mentioned last time, the kitten Guillermo, baby Guy, as they call him at the shelter, we had to give him to another foster because we couldn't keep holding on to him, and that was last Thursday, a week ago, so it's been a week. We miss him a ton. I got my wife for her birthday a collage of all his photos, and it's hanging in our office because we just loved him so much. But he was a little menace, but now he's great. He's in a new foster with another older cat that it just like pays him no mind, and he follows that cat around. And the woman that fosters him is kind of, I don't know, she has a lot of stuffed animals everywhere. I don't know. I don't want to be mean. She's nice. She's a foster. But he's doing great. He's doing fantastic. He is a prince. But who knows? Every kitten I see on that adoption site is so adorable. So if you need a cat, Bida Wee is a great shelter. They take care of their animals well. And great place to, you know, take these cats. But baby Guy was a... They found him in a fucking car. Like, that. You know, this is a good
In whose
deed.
Car?
Some fucking car out in Flatbush. They just found some... crazy woman found him and they rescued him. He's doing great, everything's good, but you know, now I can breathe. I have silence in my house. I am, you know we're getting out of that weird funk. We're heading into the winter with some new motivation. The team has been doing better, of course. We'll talk about it. And I've just bought brand new skincare products. I've been doing new meal prep and meals and everything, and going back to the gym.
Wow.
So things are, we're moving positive directions. That's the energy now. Things are good.
Yeah. Fall's here. I can finally start dressing. I can finally start living healthfully.
I can wear big chunky crew neck sweaters. That's my vibe.
I can eat breakfast smoothies healthy breakfast smoothies. With a, as you said, a whisper of kale.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, I like to think I'm being healthy, but it's just a milkshake. That's all it is.
Yeah.
But, and pumpkin everything. You know, things are happening. I don't love the fall, but, you know, I like the peace that sometimes comes with it.
Sure, yes. That things might finally be under control for once until they drain back out again in the doldrums of winter.
We'll get there.
I'm with you,
we'll
Trey.
Yeah, how are you?
I feel quite exactly the same. My wife's out of town. She's in LA on business. I'm holding down the fort by myself, and I spent the first 2 days being incredibly bored and lonely. You know, Trey, I've never really been single in my adult life, so whenever Serena goes out of town, I sort of use it as an excuse to cosplay being single and think about what would it look like? What would it feel like if all of a sudden I found myself in this position? And it's not good. I have no interest in spending time with myself, let me tell you. I am not interested in conversations with myself. Whenever I'm alone, I feel like I should be doing something to, I guess, broadcast that to other people or in some way fill the void that accumulates when I have to reflect on my internal life at all. But then, you know, that passes, and now I'm super chill and excited about watching all the cartoons that my wife doesn't let me watch. It's really real parents out of town.
That's
vibes.
It, man. You know it as well as I do. Video games I get to play for hours. It's great.
I watched the movie Gamora. You ever see this movie, Gamora? I feel like you'd like it an awful lot.
Talk to
and,
me.
And, you know, your wife being from Napoli.
Okay. Yeah. I think I have a story about that off microphone, too.
Oh, really? Yeah, about the movie?
About the guy that wrote it. Yeah,
or about or about the Gamora. About is your wife in witness protection?
No.
Okay, good. I mean, I'm glad. I'm really glad. Yeah, it's fun. It's a fun it's a fun little romp, you know, about gangs, about gang violence in Italy in a contemporary setting. Can't recommend it enough. Love to make my own programming decisions. And of course, I get to be extra loud in the house when I'm talking about soccer with you, Trey.
Likewise.
And maybe now is the time to segue into that. Yeah, are you enjoying you going full volume at 11:30 at night?
Yes, because no one can tell me not to. Mom.
Hey, hey.
I mean, wife.
Do you think there's a problem, Trey? Do you think we're arrested development-ing ourselves? Are we indulging in the privileges of our soon-to-be middle-aged maleness?
Hey, man, reading some of these articles about how far men have fallen in these relationships, like they're not doing house chores and are no longer breadwinners is like, oh man, no, you and I are doing just fine, my good boy. We are doing okay.
What's your favorite house chore, Trey?
Vacuuming, probably. We have a we invested in a nice vacuum, and it's a real life changer.
I went to
God, we're
a
so old
apartment.
Fuck me, Jesus Christ.
I know, dude, it's so bad. All right, yeah, let's go clubbing later. but Trey, before that, just to celebrate a 1-1 draw against Miami, a messy-less Miami, right? We love to pull a point away. Just fucking kidding, dude. This was absolutely unnecessary. A draw that should have been a win. We all felt it. Dominated and then sloppy behavior at the end. What do you think caused, right? To what can we assign this late giveaway that stole 2 points from us and took us that much further away from the playoffs?
The same thing that happened the first 6 months of the season. It went away for a little bit. It took a little hidey hole in the summer, but it's right back where it was, baby. The fucking problem we had week after week, which is conceding late goals on set pieces because of a lack of focus, because this team is young. And it happened again, and it sucks, and it's the same feeling, and it doesn't matter who we got there. It sucks a lot. You know, let's just jump into something people will be mad at me about. Can we give Richie Ledesma an ounce of a break? An ounce of a break for...
What do you mean?
You know, that was his man, you know... Kind of. At least on first look, it looked like his man that he just let jump, unaccounted for. But watching it a few times, as I literally just was right before we started recording, you know, it's this weird fucking system we have that works most of the time and has historically worked very well until this season for this team. That's the mixed zone man marking. And... just watching it, I believe that Richie was not a man marker on that play, that he was a zone marker on that play, and his job was to keep people from running towards the goalkeeper and getting any kind of momentum. And it seems like our marking in general from every player on that last set piece was awful. And couple that with, I was, of course, watching before that every set piece that we let Miami have had fantastic delivery. I mean, the perfect crosses and the dangerous little fucking space in between our two lines that we are the weakest in our set pieces. They really prepared well to face this team and they took advantage of it. And it just sucks. And I feel like it would suck to put like the weight of this loss on his shoulders, or tie that feels like a loss on his shoulders, when there was opportunities to win this game over and over and over again. Just because it happened at the end of the game, obviously that speaks to the mental fortitude of the team and the lack of closing, and that's important. But it doesn't mean that there weren't other opportunities that this game should have been put away, and of course there was. So, I mean, and I don't like placing a lot of blame singularly on individual players. It's a team sport. It's a team sport that relies mostly on not individual play, on team play.
Well, so I guess, and why not lean into what the folks expect from us? Like, talking tactically, do you think then, would you argue that this mixed zone man marking experiment has been a failure?
No, because I'm utterly terrified if we switch to entirely man marking or entirely zone marking. I think it's the best we can do. I think it's good.
Why terrified? Explain.
Because there's always, someone always gets lost, and you're just basically flipping a coin. You're rolling a dice you're doing an intelligence check every time and hoping the other team doesn't roll a fucking nat 20 when they put a set piece in, as opposed to having a disciplined system that you know how to practice every time that leaves the majority of players in a bad position, even if multiple players are near the ball. It just was a fucking bad outcome. I don't know what to say. It just sucked. I mean, Richie should have done better, obviously. Like, he's not without blame for that goal. It's just not a singular loss 2 points based on one individual and one play. I don't know. Like, it's not like a fucking red card or anything like that, I would say.
I think it's... I mean, it feels a little bit to me, Trey, like, who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes? You know? You can sort of... it feels like you can see the lapse there. Or that, like, you can talk about strategy all you want, but at a certain point, you're on the field. You're there. You're in front of goal. You should be sensitive enough to the arc of the ball to put yourself in front of it or handle the head off of which it's going to be bouncing. And I don't know that I'm not in camp, like, burn this guy's house down or anything, and I do think that the that lapse in judgment is a club-wide concern, but I do think that some blame can be assigned here to where it's manifested most egregiously. People nowhere near that ball don't deserve blame for what happened with that ball or, like, that it got into goal. Maybe he doesn't blame need blame for losing the match, but he certainly needs blame for losing, for that goal happening in the first place. And speaking of other moments that it could have been closed up, I felt that to a certain extent, but a lot of those chances looked better than they were to me. You know, they seemed they were frantic. They were solid chances, but they were also frantic chances that it was, to me, easier. It wasn't like people were skying balls that they could have put on target, right? Like, it was challenging, right? Like, slide in beautiful crosses, but precision, like, target precision work that just, like, didn't quite click. I think that that's probably why everybody felt ultimately like we were in control of the match, is that it was just it was good faith efforts that fell, that like didn't quite hit. And that feels like par for the course when you're talking about, you know, I wouldn't say, looking at, I don't know, any of those chances, I wouldn't look at them and say, like, oh, we're vastly underperforming expected goals, or, oh, we're, like, just, like, absolutely boofing it when we have the chance. They seemed like 50-50s to me.
Firstly, thank you for zigging to my zag so that people don't hate both of us, because, like, yeah, I think the more, you know, nuanced take is what you said. But also... I think you're right, and the data backs that up. Like, to have the amount of chances we had and shots we had in very good positions and still scrounge up a very low expected goal percentage in this match is telling. I mean, there are moments of composure that are still missing, not even at the end of the game. You know, but I don't want to... This is going to turn it... This is already... We haven't even, like... set up this game, but this is already turning into kind of a teardown fest of the team when in actuality, this is now 6 undefeated matches, and the team did play well overall in terms of the ability to create chances, the ability to defend, the ability to make their most dangerous players ineffective in this match. Across the board, it was, you know, for a good 75 to 80% of the match, the team was doing exactly what they needed to do. It's the problem is that this team has yet this season, bar maybe Orlando and some matches 5 months ago, been able to put a full, complete performance on the field, a full, good performance on the field. There is always shit happening that is in control of the team that they let get out of control. And that is probably the biggest tell of this game. You know, a team that is desperately trying to make the playoffs and racing to try to make it is proof of, even when this team is in good form, they are still unable to put a full 90-minute performance on the field. And that's just kind of indicative of the whole season.
Do you think that... is it something that can be improved before next season without major roster changes?
Yes. In fact, it's explicitly without major roster changes. I mean, getting these guys together for an off-season and, like, you know, all the new guys joined this team when they sucked and everyone was mad and shit sucked and whatever. And now you get a preseason where a majority of them are under contract and don't have to worry about moves or career choices or extensions or things like that. And they can just focus on getting to know each other better and practice more and more so they understand each other's tendencies. I think, like, those moments are going to be important. You know, like moments like hanging out and playing fucking Call of Duty together or whatever in the off season in a hotel in fucking Florida is very good when late in the season you're missing a chance and your teammate blows up at you. It's very easy to not take that personally and understand, trust the other person that they're going to make it right and whatever. Like, time heals all wounds and heals all fucking chemistry problems, and the team will be 1 year older. Like, there is... even the team not putting together 90-minute performances and having, frankly, an inability to, is not indicative that things need to change in the future structurally or anything like that. It's just indicative that this team at least has ability and needs time, and you can reevaluate. It's a constant evaluation. But the problems we're seeing, I think there's obvious depth problems. I think talent floor problems. But outside of that, it's... you know, this team wants to be a growing team and to a developmental team, and has been successful doing so in the past. And if you're going to do that, it takes growing pains. And that's what we're in the middle of.
So you feel optimistic heading into it? Because I think, right, like, you have the Hudson River Blue article, and I think that this mirrors, like, a lot of fan bases' feelings. Like, this is not a playoff-looking team. But if you can't look at this team and say this is a team that deserves to be in the playoffs, whether or not we get into the playoffs, that's not the question here. Certainly, like, you can look at this team and say, like, is this a team that's well-positioned to handle, to have a better 2024 season than they have 2023? And that seems true, right?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. Seems. It seems true. Yes.
Tell me what you think. I mean, you know, Santi Rodriguez, man of the match, like, incredibly ballyhooed, and for good reason. Did you feel like Santi gave you one of, like, a classic Santi performance that reminds you why he's one of the heaviest hitters on this side?
Yeah, I think there's two things that impressed me. I think his range was very impressive. The spaces he took up on the field. You know, one of the biggest things about this match was the amount of possession that Miami wanted to hold, as we expected, but also did take advantage of, and also the physicality of the match, which we'll talk about. I'm sure it's... was perhaps the most prominent thing of this match until the last minute goal, was his ability to take space, find space, own the space on the field, was very intentional in where he was positioning himself. You know, the most important skill he needs in the position he plays is making himself open to playmake, and not only to get open for a pass, but to position himself where the next move is the most easiest and the most effective. And I think this match was probably the one where we've seen him do that for the first time in a very long time. Secondly, I think it is now the third straight match we've seen him as a false nine throughout some period of the match. And it's the third match has been second match. Third match overall, because he did it against Dallas. It works. It works so well. He does it so good. And I like it a lot. And it worked. And thirdly, you want my most ESPN sentence? It is, that was a DP-level goal and performance in that moment. Period. You know, that was a DP goal. That was a DP takeover of the game. That was a moment where the game was kind of a little slower and the tension was starting to build, and he decided to take over in that moment, and it was brilliant. And the fucking skill, I mean, the natural talent it takes to score that goal reminded us that he does have natural talent. You know, the way he plays doesn't necessarily lend itself to it all the time, but
yeah,
that was a moment where you're like, oh, this kid can ball when he wants to. And you saw how great he felt after scoring it, and he did all he could, you know. He couldn't go back out there after he was subbed out, you know. So that was impressive. He was subbed out, I believe, correct?
He was, yeah. Okay. Late in the game, but he was.
He did all he could, you know. They won the minutes he was on the field, and that was great.
Let's pivot to talk, right? Like, if that's the good, like, I think that the person besides Ledesma who's getting the most flack from this match has to be Bonsef Bakrar, right? Mm-hmm. We talked about these chances in a sort of broad sense, but let's lens in on this motherfucker. I'll put my cards on the table, not super into the takes that this is a person who can't fin it, right? Like, that this is a person who drops opportunities or who lets things slip out of his hands when they're right in front of him, as you've already heard me say. But you're a better player analyst than I am, Trey. Are you seeing habits in Bakrar's game that should give anybody pause?
No, not at all. No. I'm
great. Keep the contrarian takes. I don't think that's consistent, folks. You know what I mean?
No. I don't think that's contrarian at all.
Sometimes I think, you know, we must sound like we're stooges, of the front office. The amount of apologizing that we do, but it's really just that you have two dudes on mic who are allergic to hot takes. You know, we are constantly urging, like, let's get 5 games of evidence for this emotional thing that you're feeling.
If we wanted to
be... sometimes we're right and sometimes we're wrong.
If we wanted to be a popular podcast, we could say, like, oh, Bakrar, he needs to have his fucking head on a pike for the chances he missed. And it's like, I'm sorry, we're not going to do that.
I don't think that would make us a popular podcast.
We just talked about enjoying expensive vacuums. That is not where you go if you want that. It's not this place.
That's it. You trust us. You know what we're looking. What we're here. Exactly. We're a calming presence. We're the Terry Gross of the Podluminati.
Here's what I'll say about Bakrar: is the style he plays and the elements he adds to this team. This team looks differently in possession than they have all season, and it is vastly different, and his gravity on the field is felt and enormous. It doesn't matter if he scored 0 goals. You could tell the team is different when he's on the field, right? So you could say, oh, you could have had any number 9, and you could have seen a difference of the team. Sure, the other thing about Bakrar is, you know, his ability to get in positions to have these shots, to have these goal opportunities, you know, is better than we've seen on this team. It's better than a lot of 9s have done that we've seen. I really just compare it to when I watch other teams in MLS. It's like there are teams with established strikers that aren't on the best teams in the world, and they are not getting in the positions or having the opportunities he does. Frankly, his biggest issue is that he is not shooting more often. Like, he needs to even more so, like, have a selfishness. He has a selfishness. We saw it with the penalty situation against Orlando. But he needs more of even more of one. But it's good to see that he has that kind of innate quality to his personality. But secondly, he leads this team ever. It's not the smallest sample size either. But if you look at goals added, possession value, a statistic that basically tells you how valuable is this person when they have the ball, and that includes how valuable the positions they get into when they receive the ball, Bakar has the best per 96-minute possession value of any player that has been on this team ever. Like, it, the only, like, he's not the kind of player like a Tati that can create for other people, that is great at laying off the ball, that is great at obviously bodying fucking defenders with his back to the net. Like, those are elements of his game that don't exist. But when it comes to getting in positions to score and being valuable on the field, he is at the level where we should, barring any injury or personal thing, should see an explosion of goals at some point, you know, barring just a complete fucking turnaround. But the bet is there for him to fucking enjoy, because he is also, by the way, extremely young. Like, strikers at his age aren't polished. They are not. We knew that when we bought him. Unfortunately, he's put in the place of trying to be the savior, the nine, the fucking quarterback of this team. But he is not that player yet. It's, I think what I'm saying is, I'm not going to prejudge what a player can be at his age when they are doing the things he's doing. There are young players, you know, might not develop well because they are missing certain important aspects to their game that aren't easy to learn. Muntsev's aspects he's missing from his game are ancillary, and he can learn in the future if he needs to. The parts of this game that he needs, he has, and it's about polishing them. And so I'm not interested in tearing down a player before they have an opportunity, a full preseason, full fitness, and full chemistry building with a team that has adequate depth and everything like that, before I pass a judgment on this player. I just don't. His ability to have fucking like four shots inside the box in the first 25 minutes of the game is fucking great. It's something we have not had on this team all year.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. Right? Like, I feel like people who are hot taking the Bakrar situation are forgetting that, like, missed chances are still chances. And there was some, you know, series of months where a chance, one chance alone in a match was balm in Gilead, you know? This is a there's a closeness to it that is not just because this team didn't win 3-1 does not mean that this team has profound offensive woes, or that this team isn't significantly better off than it was 3 months ago when we were searching for any number nine who looked like they could produce some possibility of a ball in the back of the net. We're not in that position anymore. We are better off, even if a result like this makes it feel makes you feel lower than dirt, you know? And throughout all of it, the defense has remained consistent and, in fact, continually improved. The flip side of saying, oh, NYCFC is bad on set pieces, true, absolutely, is that because we're losing on set pieces, you forget that we're not losing on regular play. And that's much due to the solidity of the back line, would you say?
Yeah, and we haven't been for six games. Like, you're right. I was about to say, like, a lot of this match is a rehash of what we said in our last podcast, or even two. It's, yep, like, the consistency of performance from key players has remained the same, and those players were good in this match as well. Risa and Martins were, again, I think, fantastic in this match. I mean, minimal chances inside the box for Miami. And when they did, like, Berkerisa had a fucking fantastic block shot near the end of the match that was just, like, so, might have been in the first half, was so, like, I mean, it was, like, veteran-level defending. And to see it from him was, I mean, just continuation of what we've seen from him. And then you talk about Perea, obviously, again, One of Bakrar's mischances was Perea running from the 8 spot and playing a 1-2 with Jason to and has the fucking speed and engine to get past behind the back line and puts in a perfect cross. Like, this guy is a fucking Swiss Army knife. And if we don't buy him, I'll be pissed. He is so good. He is so important to this team because he can play any position in the midfield, and he is a fucking winner. And
is that a real possibility? I mean, like, do you think a bit is
fuck?
It feels like he'll just float right back to Philadelphia. Are they gonna? Is he gonna be up for sale?
Yeah, unfortunately, the better he plays with us, the higher the price tag becomes. I think he will be. I don't know. It's a good question to ask him. Unfortunately, it will be decision day when I ask him, and I don't know if he'll be in the mood, but we'll see.
Let's hope so.
Let's hope we give him
a reason to say on record that he might like to stick around in the tri-state for a little bit longer.
One of the worst moments was what's a career but you don't get paid and no one takes you seriously? Hobby?
Podcasting.
One of the worst moments of my podcasting hobby year is when we got knocked out of the playoffs 1 year, well, maybe 2018, whenever we had Alya Struna. And after the match, I'm like, Struna, can you tell me something? And he like was like, no. And then he started to come up to me to like say something. And I was like, dude, no, you can go, man. Like, you're fucking miserable. And then that was it. And then he got fucking cut the next, 2 days later. Like, it was just like, yeah, maybe I don't need to, like, beg people to talk to me when they just went through one of the worst moments of their career.
You've got too much empathy, Trey. That's your flaw as a journalist.
Exactly.
You're dispassionate. 100%. Dispassionate to get the scoop.
You gotta be rude to be good. And I'm not. I'm shy and a nice boy.
Gotta be rude to be good.
So,
in the right measure.
So, we'll see how that goes. But I don't know what that situation is. I'm interested to find out. Andres Jason had great moments, and had some not great moments, but he wasn't as dynamic as the previous two games. But I was impressed by – they played a back three. That was the first time we faced a back three in a short while. And his ability to find the space to find space behind their left wing back was really impressive to me. I think he did a good job in that specific aspect. And then Talos Magno. I think that is the linchpin of what happened in this match. Again, fantastic creative play by dropping deep into the midfield and carrying the ball places. Like, he is good at carrying the ball. He should just carry the ball into more advantageous spaces as opposed to trying to carry the ball past a defender. And it looks like he has been learning that. And his defensive ability, yet again, for the third time, this new thing he has in his bag, he showed it again and was fantastic defensively and creating opportunities on the counterattack. The problem was he got injured 35-ish minutes into the game or whenever it happened. And that was a turning point for the match, frankly, because then when you get Jason on there, I mean, then you get Ledesma on there and you don't have this cool, fun stuff that he's doing. And then you get Santi playing more on the wing and that changes what he was doing. That was it. We saw Talish kind of having the Talish game and being so good, and then instantly like getting injured just sucks. He'll be okay, but it sucked for that match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it sucks for everybody. It's a demoralizing match on the whole in multiple ways, and it feels like a very frustrating way to enter what is ultimately a pretty optimistic streak that we're on the way to. We remain pretty close to being in control of our destiny here, right? I mean, this was in some ways a match that we could afford to lose, and we'll talk about it in the pre-cap, but we don't have to enter full-on despondency mode in terms of, like, the wash on the season. In some ways, it feels like we should. In some ways, it feels like we should be allowed to, so that we don't have to keep on getting strung along and we can see what everybody else is seeing and say, like, okay, listen, this is not going to be a heavy contender in the playoffs regardless. Let's start thinking about the broad future. But instead, we've got real possibilities of going from strength to strength. There's always a Cinderella moment that, like, things might click. And I don't know that anyone is even looking to that. I think it's sort of a curiosity to see, okay, so what's going to happen? And something to keep you watching week to week. Is there anything else here to cover in this match, Trey? Like you said, I think a lot of it is just redux of the last two in terms of statistical analysis.
Sure. Very briefly, Burke Risa set up for a few free kicks, and he actually took one. And that's a sign that this coaching staff does know how to adapt when things get fucking dreary and abysmal, like our free kick taking has been. You know, nothing came of it yet, but to know that he is also has that in his bag is good.
Yeah.
Secondly, I think the only other big storyline from this game is, of course, what we hinted at before, is that fucking Miami... fucking assholes. We're fucking fouling left and right, and the referee gave it to him, and he never said the fucking... This is exactly the three straight fouls in the first 4 minutes of the match by Sergio Busquets, and not getting a yellow card for the way he was playing, and I'm sure a way he feels like he had to. Like, Messi's not there, Alba's not there. I gotta be the fucking, you know, person in this hot Miami night and fucking... You know, running, he plays 90 minutes every match. Like, this dude knows that one way to slow a game down and to play at his age is to be vicious, is to make some hard tackles. And the referee set a standard from that moment, not giving a card, that this was going to be a match where fouls are going to be free. And the worst of it is, the red card that frankly was not given, that should have been given, that was a studs up tackle high on the ankle at the end of the first half, and it sucks that we were not given that, and I don't know, it just, what do you say? You can't say anything, you know. Look, Nick Cushing, if anything, does not BS when it comes to his opinions on refereeing. And when he said he had that dime of a quote, I'm not gonna lie, his press conferences are mighty. I always go straight to the locker room. I should go to his press conferences maybe a little more often, because they're fun. Like,
low key, dude's got personality. We should maybe do a highlights reel of the season before we're sans Cushing for the rest of our lives.
We could post all the times he lied to us in terms of gamesmanship. The quote was, "It is what it is. We knew when we were walking in here, we would be walking down the MLS red carpet, and we wouldn't be the invited guest." God damn. Fucking, that's a bar. And he's right.
Where's the lie?
I got the disciplinary report, and this match was nowhere near it. So I feels like in the moments Cushing has... This is obviously a coincidence and not in any way correlated, but every time Nick Cushing has bitched at the referees, they have not tried to make amends and correcting their calls or giving fines or suspensions afterwards every time he's done that. So it didn't happen this time either. They looked again at that foul and thought, nope, does not deserve a suspension or a fine. That's it. What do you say? I think this team, like... They still could have won the game, and they should have. That's just a way that teams will. That's the way fucking Red Bulls play. That's a way a few teams play. Is you have to be ready for it. And I think the team did a fucking fantastic job of eliminating Busquets from the match as a creator almost entirely. That was something we said last podcast had to happen, and it did happen until the 94th minute when he had a fucking dime into the corner flag and to another player that earned the corner that ended up losing us the win. So the thing about Busquets is you got to cover him fucking 100% of the time, not 99% of the time. And lastly, Miami is not a bad team just because they didn't have Messi or Alba. this team.
Yeah, and this is something we presaged that in the last podcast too, right? Like, this was going to be a challenge no matter what.
They're not a bad team anymore. Sorry. Like, they're an they just got drummed by Chicago, by the way. So they're not a good team, but they're not a bad team anymore. And you know, I think this was not us, like, and it's not like as if we tied Toronto. This is a different team now than a team similar to Toronto. And I think that you can learn a little bit from that as well. Anyways, I think that's all I had on my list of things to say.
We'll get to what it like what it forebodes, that like this team that is neither bad nor good, that just got drummed by a team that we are going to be playing and are going to need to pull a win away from in order to make the playoffs, says for us. But let's get into some talking points, Trey.
Talking points.
Bing bong. Not a lot of talking points. Listen, honestly, except for I think we have to, since we are the secret satellite arm of the outfield, we really should talk about Chris Campbell's latest journalistic masterpiece, right? Can we talk about what we can expect from the coop? From the stadium renderings that are floating around on the internet, from the 70-foot NYCFC logo, the shit is looking more real than ever, my friend. The parking situation has been resolved for NYCFC's en route stadium in Queens. What were the highs and lows of this most recent disclosure for you? What were you most excited by looking at the renderings, and what gives you the hives?
I think most specifically, it's a lot of things that were hinted at in some of the designs we saw previously, but this time we got actual numbers. Obviously, what I'm most excited for is the 70-foot tall, 100-foot wide NYCFC logo that will be on the side of the stadium. That is rad as fuck. We talked about appreciating kind of the open corners style. It's modern, it's interesting, its usability is high, but and I like, you know, something else that was hinted at the documents was the ability to use it as more of a public space, as those businesses that would be built into the sides of the stadium, like a cafe and like some other public space, is going to be open when NYCFC is not there. I like the idea of kind of being a cornerstone of a new neighborhood that is being created. If you are someone that moves into that neighborhood, the stadium will be a huge part of your life. Like, anyone that has lived in multiple New York City apartments has something close to their apartment they lived in at one point that they remember that apartment by. You know what I'm saying? And I think now I can't talk because I'm going through all of them in my head. And I'm sure you are too, listener. And I like the fact that the stadium is going to be like that, is going to be the thing that people remember about living in that area. And it's cool. There was like a concert going on at the last home game at Citi Field, and at the same time as the game, and it was in the, you know, U.S. Open area of Flushing, and it was cool to have multiple things going on at the same time, and like this idea of like, feels very New York to have large groups of people going to multiple different things. It's like when you take the subway through Times Square at 9 or 10 p.m., you get a bunch of people holding different playbills, and you're like, I'm in New York, baby. Like, there's a new energy in this train now of those people. And when we get to 34th, it'll be those people. And when we get to 14th, it'll be those people. And, like, that feeling is going to only intensify in that area of New York that was, frankly, like, the corner that you only went to when you had an event is now going to be a neighborhood. And that's cool.
Do you think it's, is it being handled with, I don't know, care? I feel like just listening to you talk about that, like there's a nervousness to building a neighborhood around a commercial enterprise like this. it's a little anonymizing, right? Like to say, oh, okay, yes, you're going to move into that neighborhood, and this stadium is going to be not only a feature but the feature. Does it suck? Is it too much gravity for it to ever be like a real authentic New York neighborhood? Or is all of this care that's going into, right, like building with the community actually going to generate, I don't know, a unique culture?
I think in the short term, the concerns are valid because I think that area is isolated in a way, you know, contextually isolated. Of course, it is not isolated. It's New York City, but relative to other areas of the city, it's intensely isolated. And so it'll be weird. I think that this stadium is here. It's here. What we're forgetting, because we deal in life as a soccer fan of this team in seasons and not in decades, is that this is here for the long term. This is here for decades and decades. And I'm confident about the positivity of creating a new neighborhood like that and potentially building out Flushing, like us being the first big thing that has happened in 40 years to grace that area. To revitalize for decades to come. And that's what I'm excited by.
Yeah, I mean, me too. It's not as if, right, that's a fair thing. The alternative is .. What? The alternative is
novelty.
Continued, like, post-industrial wasteland, right? The alternative is Mets owner casino, right? It's weird to be fairly confidently the good guys in terms of a development plan for this neighborhood and for this community, the community that is developing, that is emerging. Let's talk about pitch size. Are you disappointed not to be porting over the old baseball stadium size?
Sure, like, fine. Ooh, that's a funny bit for like 10 seconds. Like, whatever. Again, let's talk about decades, not seasons here. And, like, we can leave... Mm. And you know what? Leaving that pitch size for the era of us not having a stadium and playing in baseball stadiums, that is an attached novelty to this team, and it's part of the identity of this era of this team, regardless of what we like to think, but that is the universal idea across the country, is that, like, that is another nice novelty we can leave in that era. You know, we're big boys now, having our own stadium. Let's play on a big boy stadium, you know? I know people complained about it all the time, and that's the only reason people want it is for spite, because they're mad that people made fun of us. Like, they had good reason to make fun of us. We played on a small pitch in a fucking baseball stadium, and that's okay. We're going to leave that behind and grow up. Also, the best take on this, and perhaps the only take, and makes me seem like a loser for what I just said, is what Carter Daly, former NYCFC employee in the content area, said when the outfield posed this question. He said, the last time I thought about the pitch size, never, because I'm not a dork. And, like, that is the correct answer. I don't know if he said dork. Well, did he say dweeb? Ugh. Whatever. Dork also sounds funny.
Damn. Yeah, they're both good. They're both good burns, if we're fair. Was there anything else to unpack here? I mean, I think it's exciting that there's, you know, that, like, we have the leverage to avoid the whole parking crisis. To say, okay, we've got enough, you know, verbal agreements or handshake deals with local parking spaces, with local parking garages, that this isn't something that we have to fret about. I look at those numbers, though, you know, in terms of parking spaces and also the distance of the stadium, and part of me worries that we're relying, we're putting too much of an emphasis on public transit not being able to control our own destiny, even if, right, like, it's still not a favorable, it seems like we'd still heavily prefer access to the Mets' use of parking lot. Right?
You're 100% right. Essentially, what this agreement, these documents said was, like, look, there probably very likely won't be very many, if any at all, times when we won't have access to City Field parking. And that's good. Yay, everyone be happy. But, you know, in those rare moments, everyone's fucked. And like, kind of squeeze that one in. Like, if we don't have access to those parking lots, we, you know, to dial up that long Uber trip, baby, because you are not going to be parking anywhere close to the stadium. You're going to have to park. I mean, people might have to, like, park and train. But, you know, that is a problem for other people.
Car owners.
that have cars, that have driven a car in the
unlike
last
you and me.
12 years, unlike me.
Yeah, it's true. It's true enough. It's true enough, Trey. I'm scrolling, I'm flipping, I'm looking for anything that I'm desperate to talk about right now, and there's really not that much. I guess the last question would be, do you think that this, looking at these new, right, the new timelines that are outlined here, do you think there's any reasonable possibility that this stadium will host World Cup games in 2026?
Nope, not at all. Not even close. It's going to be like a third of the necessary size. Oh, that's a nice... No, never mind. Who cares? It's too late. I was going to talk about the announced 2030 World Cup, but who gives a shit? I do want your opinion, but we can do it another time.
Let's do it another time. Why not? Shall we move on to playoff contention?
Yes.
Or not, and to the DC game upcoming?
Yes. Sorry, I said yes, but I mean yes again.
Great. Good. Yes. Yes. Yeah, I said yes, and he yes with my yes. Let's get Joycean up ins. The United are standing between us and playoff glory, or at least the possibility of Nick Cushing keeping his job. What is the likelihood, strong, medium, or weak, that we can take a disappointing match against Miami and reclaim what we know is our right to 3 points this weekend?
This weekend I'm not as worried about. I mean, this should be our easiest match bar Toronto in a long time. DC is close to 1 point away from us on the table, you know. But as with any of these shitty teams, it's going to be another shitty fucking game. It's going to be another one of these bully it out, try to survive kind of matches. Now, the good thing is, like, DC United has not won a match in a long time, in at least 5 games. And they have looked toothless in a lot of these games. But they're DC United... You know, can't forget when they beat us without taking a shot on target. Like, this is not a team that... this is a team that can pull shit from their ass with good old Wayne Rooney as their coach. I mean, they have... They're trending downward, clearly. But, you know, Benteke is not an easy player to play against. They have Click, of course. And they're annoying, the same annoying players that we've seen year over year from them in Knaus and Durkin and well, I mean, Durkin too, but Birnbaum. You know, this podcast has had a strong opinion on Alex Bono for a long time, and that has not changed. So it's going to be annoying, man. What did we do last time? I'll check. Don't worry. You can talk.
Are you encouraged? What did we do last time against DC?
Yeah.
3-2 victory.
Yeah. Perhaps close to the same.
And Bono's coming off of a 3-0 loss to Austin. Like, it would be nice to see the same, but it would be equally as nice to just have an incredibly dominant experience this weekend, which I think is also within possibility. It really does sort of feel like play the same game plan and net a couple more of those opportunities and walk away feeling like you know what the fuck you're doing.
Yeah, entirely. I mean, this is it. Like, this is a perfect, honestly, like, this is a good time, a good setup. It's an away match. Okay, I get it. But... You know, you had some good performances. One against a really good team and one against a really bad team. Okay, now we face Miami. Not good, but not bad team away. And we really should have put that game away. Okay, so that what the Miami match should have told us, we're going to find out against DC, a team that I think we match up favorably well against. And It's going to be, can we break that fucking line? I'm really going to be curious about what Bakrar does. Like, can we break their lines? Because they're going to hold tight lines, and they're going to hold tight lines pretty deep, I'm assuming. So, but this is it. I mean, this is must win. This is the dipstick match. And frankly, like, if Magno's healthy, we got to see him on the field with Bakrar. I want to see Bakrar do his thing. Santi, and go from there. I mean, it's... I mean, and this is something we didn't say, is Nick Cushing mentioned, I think like 2 or 3 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, the importance to him of having a solid lineup going into the playoffs. And this is a team that has been in fucking flux is an understatement.
Yep.
But yep. In the last 5-ish matches, we've had the same 11. For the first time, this team has some stability in the starting 11 for the most part, even choosing a new number one goalkeeper, putting Kevin O'Toole out there really frankly for the first extended time of the season, yet he has not been removed. And he is someone, by the way, who, you know, took the experience of the Campeones Cup and his performances around then to earn a starting spot last winter into the playoffs and being an important part of the team, frankly, in some of those performances. So, like, we are seeing Nick Cushing now in this place where, and not just Nick Cushing, but the team, understand the position they're in and that they need. I mean, that's his philosophy, but it's not necessarily a flatly untrue one on face value, that you need a level of stability in your starting 11. So I expect the same. By the way, Keaton Parks is healthy. It's back. We saw a little bit of him. Let's see what he rolls out. It's going to be something similar to what we saw in Miami.
Do you have a scoreline for us?
Yeah, we're going to win 2-0 so that we can all fucking be paranoid on the last day of the season. The worst feeling in the world. Having decision day matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what fun is that?
We have to win, and we have to pray that Montreal or Charlotte, I believe, need to drop some points. I mean, you were right last podcast. We're not in an impossible position because we didn't beat Miami, but we don't control our destiny. Even though we are in a good position for a team that does not control their destiny, we do not control our destiny.
Well, so let's just get the points. Let's get the points. Let's get the points in a dominating way that puts us in a good position on decision day in terms of morale, and that's all you can hope for. I think a 2-win is entirely, entirely possible, particularly with the defense continuing to play like it has been. I'm excited to... I think we're better off than we have a right to be, and I'm excited to find out what happens.
Goldfish, baby.
Hey, where do you tweet at, Trey?
Trey Fillmore, what about you?
At Jake Beckhard, and you can find us both at Blue Balls Pod.
Oh, I forgot to say it.
You know how it works. Wow, embarrassing. It's past midnight.
Dude, I literally just zoned out completely. I stopped talking and literally started, like, not falling asleep, but you know that place where you're just out of it? That's where I was.
Just thinking about candy. That's what I think about. There's a Ray Romano stand-up joke that's like, he's like, checks in with his daughter, and he's like, what are you thinking about? And she goes, candy. And that's me most of the time. That's some Swedish fish, some Lifesaver gummies, you know?
Subscribe to the podcast if you like podcasts that end on a Ray Romano bit being retold.
Yeah, for those of you who are just trying us out this late in the season, please like and subscribe. Mash that alert button, baby. But if you are already subscribed and you're looking for a way to support, you can always drop a dollar in the tip jar to help keep the lights on, or you can buy some merch. Merch table looking dusty. Dust is settling on these beanies or whatever. Get up on there. Help us out. Buy a little. Represent your Blue Balls fandom, and we will see you next week, when we will be that much closer to finally being done with this turd sandwich season and moving into something else. We'll find out, and we'll see you then. Bye.
Bye.